Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this is the one pra evening, time to gather together and share some practice, renew precepts, offer a few reflections on the teachings. One of the discussions or questions that often arises in relation to the teachings, particularly as they have come to the West, are around the practice of mindfulness, as I think all of us are aware, the quote-unquote mindfulness movement has taken off in many circles in the West, and a lot of permutations and combinations of various practices are being taught and discussed in this vast interpretation, definition, redefinition of mindfulness practice. But even in the more classic presentations and places that it's being practiced, Western meditation centers, monastic communities, still sometimes there's an awful lot of speculation or discussion about, well, you know, really what is mindfulness, what is right mindfulness, all of these discussions which probably most of us have been part of over the past number of years. One of the ways that this comes up is almost in a kind of two-angled way of describing mindfulness practice in general. Oftentimes, as some of the teachings have come from Asia to the West and put into practice in meditation centers, there's an emphasis or a description of mindfulness practice as being primarily one of kind of a non-judgmental, non-evaluative awareness, so that aspect of viewing experience, watching experience, knowing experience from a completely non-judgmental state of mind, just essentially practicing to watch what arises in the mind without any value judgment as to rightness or wrongness or skillfulness or unskillfulness, but to simply see all momentary experience just as it is, without any judgment at all, without any evaluation at all. sometimes refer it, you know, people refer to it in different ways, that kind of experience, but choiceless awareness is one that has become a term that's used over time. Other ones also. So there's that teaching, that instruction, and that encouragement as mindfulness practice in that way, coming from a number of different teachers' directions. Others present it and look at it and say, no, that's that's not what the Buddha meant by mindfulness practice, and encourage a much more active process, one that actually is evaluative and directive, taking note of the skillfulness of the things that arise in one's mind, or the unskillfulness, and acting accordingly. In other words, making a judgment about what our experience is as to whether it's skillful or unskillful, and using mindfulness, right mindfulness, to direct, focus, and develop skillful states of mind that are part of the path of practice to freedom, freedom from suffering. So, we have discussions about these things, or people have discussions, people have opinions, people teach different things along these lines, and I myself contemplate them as well to see what seems to be useful in terms of practice, keeping the overall goal in mind of the ending of suffering, the purpose for which the Buddha taught this path. One of the ways of looking at the mind and the activities and the things that bring us happiness, bring us suffering, that I found useful is that some of the teachers in the Western tradition, monastic teachers, that I've learned from and done reading from, describe aspects of the mind along lines that I find useful to consider. It might, as I talk, some of this might kind of sound a bit academic or intellectual, and to some extent, of course, it is. But I find that it's in watching the own activities in this habituated mind of my own, I find it useful to analyze it in some ways, or to reflect on it in these terms. But some of the teachers I've been listening to and reading from over the years have described a couple of aspects of the mind, the citta, the heart. One being a productive aspect, one being a receptive aspect. I think Ajahn Jeff uses the words, the mind is both the producer and the consumer of experience. Others describe it as, the productive aspects, the active aspects of mind, or the receptive aspects of mind, that the mind both creates experience, creates activity, and experiences activity as well. So this kind of dual aspect of citta. And in many of the teachings, particularly in some of the later organizations of teachings, like in the Abhidhamma, there's lists of mental activities, mental objects, mental functions in a way, that come up, both skillful states, skillful activities of mind that lead to increased refinement and experience of goodness, and also unskillful mental factors, numerous unskillful ones that lead to states of suffering, difficulty, confusion, and that these mental factors are in operation, for better or for worse, throughout our normal conscious activity. And also in those teachings described, there are five basic mental factors that are common to any present experience. And the five fundamental mental factors are contact, feeling, perception, intention, and attention. So these are various aspects of mind. People have seen these in lists before. I don't know how much people have really considered them or just recognized them as part of a list of mental factors. But I find it useful to, when watching the mind, particularly after a period of calming meditation, to still the mind, to start to watch and reflect and experience the activities of the mind through this kind of a lens of recognition of these particular factors as they arise, because they are arising in any, as I said, in any one present experience. So contact, feeling, perception, intention, and attention. And that I found that actually a useful structure in helping to answer that original question of what is mindfulness practice, or how is mindfulness practice most useful. Just real briefly around these particular factors, just to give a brief definition for those who may not be so familiar with these particular terms, these mental factors. Contact is the basic raw experience of any kind of activity along the sense bases, the five physical sense bases: sight, sounds, taste, smells, and tactile sensation, and then the sixth sense of the intellect activity. The contact is any moment of present moment experience through one of these sense doors. So that the basic description of contact is just using an example of vision or seeing. You have the eye, which would be the internal sense organ in this realm, the eye. And then you have the form, the object that the eye sees, like the person across the room, or whatever object comes in contact with the eye. And those two together, with the presence of consciousness activated in that particular realm, awareness of seeing, those three come together, the eye, the form, and the consciousness. At the same time, all of those come together, you have this moment called contact, visual contact. So there's an experience of seeing. Same is true for the other sense bases, and including the mind. You have the mind base, an idea is the object, and if consciousness is activated in that realm, then you have the experience of mental contact, mind contact. So this is what's meant by contact, just the pure experience of some activity through a sense base happening in any moment of present experience, right now. Right now you're hearing consciousness, or hearing contact is probably activated, and you might have a quick stray thought, and all of a sudden mental contact is happening, and it kind of darts back and forth depending on where your consciousness lands. So that's contact. Feeling refers to the basic experience in any moment of contact that knows that experience, that qualitative experience of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, essentially neutral. just a very basic feeling tone, so that most experience, even if it's subtly one way or another, is experienced as pleasant or unpleasant, or neither. So that, you know, good food, pleasant experience, bad smell, unpleasant experience, something subtle and not very noticeable one way or the other. Say the process of breathing tends to be more towards neutrality, although one could say it could either be subtly pleasant or subtly unpleasant. So feeling is just the experience of pleasantness, unpleasantness, neutrality in any one moment of experience, along with contact. Perception is this other factor, this third factor, that is present quality and arises also in conjunction with contact. So we have perception being the recognition, the attachment of some sort of meaning to experience. So again, with the visual consciousness or the visual contact, there is a pleasant or an unpleasant feeling, and then a recognition. Oh, person. You know, there's a naming and identification based on memory, based on past experience. So there's this recognition. This is the perceptual activity. And the teachings tell us that these three factors essentially happen simultaneously, or at least in conjunction with each other, if not simultaneously, in conjunction. They're described as conjoined, not disjoined. So that contact, feeling, perception all arise essentially together in present moment experience. The other two factors, briefly, intention and attention. Intention, chaitana, is the fundamental drive behind kamma. All kamma meaning action, karma meaning action. So that at the basis of any kamically potent activity, any action that we will experience results from, is intention, an important factor. There's some kinds of activity that we engage in that may not have intention behind it, or at least conscious intention, and that doesn't necessarily produce a kamic result. So in terms of kamma, intention, chaitana is very essential quality aspect of it. Attention, manasikara, is just this ability to focus on a particular experience, to direct our experience and to move based on intention. So we can direct our attention based on our intention. These are aspects that are occurring in present moment experience, normal, unenlightened mind present, present moment experience. So I find these are useful thoughts to contemplate when I'm watching my own mind, when I'm watching what comes in and what goes out, and the qualitative experience, and kind of see, at least in my own experience, how these first three activities, contact, feeling, perception, these conjoined activities, are more of a part of a receptive aspect of the mind, of the heart. We experience the contact in a particular sense base as a receptive quality based on some past intention. We experience the feeling and the associated pattern of perception. And these are experiences that can be known, can be brought into conscious awareness and reflected on, experienced, kind of a receptive quality. The mental factors of intention and attention, in my mind, in my experience, tend to be more productive. They're forward moving, provide sort of a thrust of the mind, a direction of the mind in terms of its movement. So to me, that kind of points toward an answer of that question of, well, okay, like, is appropriate mindfulness practice, is it more just this kind of passive, receptive, you know, choiceless or non-judgmental awareness of what's going on in the mind, or is it more a selective choosing to develop skillfulness in our daily activities and actions? And I think for me, the answer comes up, it's both. The appropriate mindfulness practice involves both of those, depending on which aspect of experience we're considering, what we're looking at. Because we have to be able to see clearly without bias what is actually arising in our own minds if we really want to understand our conditioning and how we've, you know, over years and lifetimes, how we've developed certain patterns of experiencing the world in its unpleasantness, in its pleasantness, in its goodness, in its difficulties. And to see with kind of non-reactivity, not just allowing the mind to just be swayed and influenced and controlled by these different results that come from past action. So in a sense, that these first three factors of the receptive state of mind, this is the what the Buddha might call vipaka, or the result of past action, the experience of past intentional activities. We experience as the way we contact the world, the way we experience different unpleasant or pleasant feelings, and the ways that we interpret them and establish meaning in our lives through the perception. So these are the result, results of past action, and that the other two factors, intention, attention, are more of an active aspect of that we might call kamma activity. So we have the kamma and the vipaka, the action and its results. And our duty, in a sense, as I see it anyway, is to really know with honesty and clarity and objectivity the vipaka that comes our way, the experience of past action, so that we're not just blindly reacting to experience and habitually following these kinds of patterns. And that essentially our duty around the more active aspect of mind activity is to really establish intention towards the ending of suffering, and which involves the creation, the production of really skillful, healthy states of mind along the lines of right effort, you know, trying to increase skillful states of mind, skillful qualities, and to decrease the unwholesome ones. So all the ones that are associated with, you know, essentially greed, hatred, and delusion, these qualities of mind of, you know, irritation, anger, craving, these activities of mind we're aware of. And we establish an intention, a very active mindfulness practice to let go, reduce, abandon these unskillful activities, and establishing a very intentional activity in the mind to create skillful ones that are leaning towards skillfulness and wholesomeness, loving kindness and compassion, wisdom, all the different qualities, the different paramis, perfections of life, generosity, truthfulness, determination, moral values, moral virtue activities, all of these kinds of skillful activities that support the development of skillful states of mind, wisdom. So to really use our intention to drive us in that direction in a really productive way, and then establishing where it is that we want to put our attention so that manasikara attention becomes skillful attention, skillful, wise attention, yoniso manasikara, where we really want to put our minds, what we want to put our minds onto. So that's more of the kama-producing side of these mental factors. So both kama, vipaka, both productive, receptive qualities that we need to employ. That kind of more passive, receptive, alert, aware state of mind, non-judgmental, really being wanted to honestly look at what our patterns are, the willingness to see them without just blindly reacting, and the willingness to very clearly choose where we want to put our mind, put our attention, put our activities, kama-producing activities of body, speech, and mind, how we want to develop them in skillful ways. One of the, along those lines, just kind of considering some of the various other aspects of these five chetasika, is what they're called in Pali, chetasika, mind, mental factors, I guess. Thinking about the mental factor of feeling, and just reflecting on that, the importance of really knowing what is the feeling tone occurring in any moment. One of the satipatthana, one of the foundations of mindfulness or the establishings of mindfulness is around feeling, because it's a very potent focus for developing insight, a frame of reference for developing insight. Because how our minds move and the habits that we tend to be involved with in a very reactive way are often dependent, or usually dependent, on the quality of the feeling. So that we have an unpleasant experience, unpleasant feeling, in the realm of food, say an unpleasant taste or a pleasant taste, or an experience, say an interaction with another person that's difficult or unpleasant. And we can see that for, say, an unpleasant experience of whatever sense activities going on, whatever sense base we're involved with, the tendency, the underlying tendency, as is mentioned in the teachings, the underlying tendency towards under unpleasant feeling is that towards aversion, avoidance. We want to get rid of, to annihilate, to get away from unpleasant experience. This is the underlying tendency of mind. The underlying tendency for pleasant experience is desire, the movement of mind to get, to obtain, to consume, because we want to increase that pleasant experience. And the underlying tendency in regards to neutral feeling is just ignorance, not knowing it, not being aware of what's happening, because it's so qualitatively neutral that it just doesn't capture any attention. So really getting to know this experience of feeling is really important in watching how we develop patterns in our mind. If we can really clue into the unpleasantness or the pleasantness of experience, we can then watch to see what the habitual reactions are to it, to get away from it, unpleasant, or to get it if it's pleasant, and how that establishes habits that lead ultimately to suffering, because we get caught in aversion, we re-experience that, we move into that, and that's a habit, you know, that creates a lot of suffering, and the same with craving or desire. You know, we move to get something, and we get it, and we experience a moment of pleasantness, and then once we've got it, the thrill is gone, the pleasure starts to fade, and we have to find something else to give us the same feeling of pleasantness. So we get caught going back and forth and back and forth of avoiding the unpleasant, seeking the pleasant. This is a root cause of dukkha, of suffering. And then we can use this contemplation around perception, this other mental factor of just seeing the patterns, because perceptions are based on repetitive experience and how we automatically revert back to some past experience that has created a fixed perception. Say of, you know, just as an example common to most of our daily lives is, you know, maybe we've had some difficulties or some stressful experiences in regards to a particular person. And you know, the moment that person comes into our daily experience and we see them or they're around, then immediately, based on programming, based on this past patterning in our minds, we come to assume the worst and expect the worst, and just, uh-oh, you know, here she comes or here he comes, and, you know, what's going to happen now? And all of a sudden, we create this whole anticipated experience and actually come to look for those particular qualities that we remember as difficult or unpleasant. We almost seek them out and focus on them. And even if they don't come, we're kind of on guard. And when they do come, it just, of course, validates and proves our expectation and reinforces it even more. So this is how we cause ourselves suffering in the perceptual realm, by holding on to these fixed ideas and not allowing ourselves to see things more in their element and in the clarity, without moving into that, you know, presumed experience based on past perception, past patterning. So this is a real potent aspect of a mental experience to really explore and to know as, well, this is just a pattern, a habituated pattern. I don't need to actually buy into it. I don't need to believe it just because that's what has been habituated through constant attention and reinforcement. There is the possibility of actually having different perceptions about an experience or a situation or a person. You know, we can change our perceptual process. And that's where really employing conscious activity and the productive side comes into being. We, through honest investigation, through honest reflection, through our mindfulness of honestly looking at just what is this experience and how am I reacting, we can modify that programming. We can create a new program through recognition of the dukkha that it's causing, and then through conscious shifting of our attention to something that's a more skillful aspect of, say, the experience or the person or the interaction or whatever it is, we can, through this intention of wanting to be free from suffering, the intention of wanting to experience goodness and to contribute towards non-harming, non-suffering, through that kind of intentional activity, we can direct our attention to skillful objects, to the positive qualities in a negative experience, a negative patterning, redirecting ourselves in skillful ways using wise attention, wise reflection, and skillfully abandoning through, again, not engaging in inappropriate attention, abandoning inappropriate attention when we're kind of moving into objects that create craving. We can direct our attention away from that, or moving into objects that create aversion and reinforcing that. We can change that. We can move our attention to skillful areas. The development of these qualities of mind, as I mentioned, of loving kindness, of patience, of compassion, of understanding, of wisdom. So using these basic building blocks of mental activity to really understand and see our patterns through clarity and through actively changing and redirecting the way that we experience the world, the capacity to do both with these different mental factors. We can also choose, again, through intentional activity, to really look at all of these qualities, too, in relationship to the more insight-developing aspects of reflection. And particularly, I find very useful to consider all of these qualities, these mental factors, these five mental factors, as basic, just impersonal factors that are part of the citta, part of the human mind, part of the heart, that are not self. Looking at things in their, looking at these five mental factors in their quality of, this is not anything actually to identify with. I mean, I find that's a very useful contemplation too, because then it takes the pressure off of there being a me or an I that is the producer and the experiencer, that we're actually just recognizing impersonal patterns and developing skillful qualities that are not necessarily, that are not, that don't have to be defined as me or mine. And when you think about it, when you look at it, you can see like those factors of contact, feeling, perception are often qualities that we bring into a sense of self through this mind, this possessive quality. These are my feelings. These are my perceptions. We take ownership of them, identify with them as something that we possess, and that we are, that we have a sense of ownership for better or for worse. And so, if we have unpleasant experience or unpleasant patterns of mind, we lament about how could I, be so stupid, or how could I be, so ignorant as to fall into these same patterns over and over again. We take it very personally. And when you look at the qualities of, say, intention and attention, how often they have this quality of I, this I-producing motion, like I will do this, or I will become this kind of person. I will, you know, I have the tendency to focus on unskillful things, and I have the tendency to do this, you know, these productive aspects of mental activity we see as I, the producer, I or me, the producer of these states of mind, these experiences. So we have the quality of self involved throughout these as either I am the producer, or these are my feelings, my perceptions, or putting them all together into the sense of this is myself, these three aspects of self-identification, I, mine, and myself. And to realize that that's just another, in a sense, another misperception, that these are all qualities, experiences that are devoid of any inherent self. And it's very subtle, because even in quiet states of mind, you're even watching something like the mind move from its base of quiet into some activity. There's a sense of an agent, you know, who's doing something like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to direct my mind to loving kindness, or I'm going to direct my mind to investigation of, you know, certain Dhamma qualities, or I am going to direct my attention to the breath. You know, there's a sense of an agent who's responsible, because this movement of mind through intention, through chaitanya, has a very powerful feeling to it, that is very easily confused as with a sense of self. And when you think about it, you know, like, oh, what is this agent that is able to actually intend to take action? There's some agent that's making this movement, that's initiating this movement, and it really feels like me. So to really look at that and question that and say, well, okay, well, the Buddha says, you know, all of this is not self. Well, what is that? What is it that's creating that movement through intention? What is it that's the agent of this? And really, for the most part, it's greed, hatred, and delusion. That's what it is. It's actually the motivating agent in intentional activity. Through not seeing clearly, through wanting, through desire, through craving, through aversion, irritation, anger, whatever the mind state is, this is the agent that is creating karmic activity. It's not me, it's not I, it's this greed, hatred, and delusion. This is the agent for all of our karmic-producing activity. So you can really use all of these, again, these five mental factors to see our experience both in its receptivity aspect and its productivity aspect, and also as a way of really looking clearly at the impersonality of all of this, and the fact that we still have the ability to develop skill through these mental activities and increase wholesome activities through wholesome intention, through the skillful positive qualities to supplant the greed, hatred, and delusion that normally runs the activity of the mind, and to create agents of skill, agents that are of kindness. So that kindness motivates our activity and is the agent. Patience and all these other positive qualities, virtue, generosity, we can establish these as the agents for intentional activity. Again, it's not self. It's just skillful agents rather than unskillful agents that we're employing. but just reflecting on how all of it's not who I am. It's not me, it's not mine. And then eventually, if we can take the practice to its ultimate, you know, we start to realize how we can fabricate experiences for better, fabricate experiences for worse, and we choose the more skillful ones, and we choose the ones that are in line with Dhamma, in line with the Eightfold Path. This is what we create. This is how we create different and useful experiences that bring goodness and non-harmfulness into our world, into our lives. And as we do that, and I really appreciate the way Ajahn Jeff expresses this, is as we really understand this whole process of fabrication, then we can also understand how we can use that to stop fabricating. Once we know how to create the world of our experience, we can also understand how to stop the creation, not only of unskillful tendencies, but to just allow the momentum of mind to start to unwind, to start to relax, to start to let go. And we realize that all of these activities are, you know, willed, fabricated experiences. And we see them more and more in the lens of Dhamma, so that we see them as they arise and as they maintain, as they pass away. And we also realize that we can, in that moment of passing away, cessation, we can rest there. We can stop fabricating altogether. We can stop creating bad things, unpleasant things. We can stop creating even pleasant things and just come to the place of just pure knowing without creating any more activity, any more fabrications. And rest not only in the cessation of these activities, but in the non-arising. There's no intentional motion of mind towards fabrication. We just rest in this non-arising, this unconcocting, this not creating, and more dwell in that kind of purity of knowing, that purity of awareness. And it's, as it's taught anyway, this is kind of on the precipice, on the edge, as the teachings say, at the gates to the deathless. This is where all of this karmic-producing activity can just come to rest. It's not that it's annihilated, that experience ends, but the karmic-producing activities just relax. They just don't happen. And we're left with a clarity of pure knowing that can then open to what is called the experience of the deathless, the experience of the unconditioned, that experience of true freedom. And this is where suffering comes to end. So I think I'll just leave it there for this evening. A few reflections for consideration tonight.
Sadhu, 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 anumodam.
This being the one prana night, normally we would continue and have, our all-night vigil.